You're receiving an honorary degree from Haverford College for Winnie Mandela, who can't come to receive it herself because she's under a severe banning restriction in banning order in South Africa. What actions has she taken over the years that has led the government to put her under such restrictions?
I don't know if you know a lot about the situation in South Africa. The minority government in South Africa is a white minority government. The white people there and the Asians, Indians and white people together form about 30% of the population, and 70% of the population is black people. And of all the races in South Africa, the black people are the most oppressed, and we have no vote in our own country, and we're not represented in any of the governmental organizations, meaning parliament. The laws that govern us are the laws that are made by other people in our country and not by us. And so our people have decided to fight this oppression. And Winnie Mandela is one of those women who rushed out to fight oppression in their own country and fight for a government that would be representative of all the people of South Africa. She's the wife of Nelson Mandela, as you know, who is one of our leaders who was sentenced to a life imprisonment on Robben Island. Winnie has been banned now for almost a total of 15 years. Each time her banning order is about to expire, the South African government imposes another one. The last one was imposed before the one that she was serving had even expired. And this is because she has been an open critic of the system. And she has done nothing wrong. I can't think of anything wrong that she has done. But like all of us and all the women in South Africa, for instance, I'll take just one instance, education, which is paramount in all the countries. There's free education in America for all the citizens, free education in England for all the citizens. The South African government hasn't got free education for the black children. And we've got what is like a subsidized education. But then the white children are better subsidized than the black children, you see. So the result is that you get fewer black children getting education. And when I say getting education, getting sound education, because the black mothers, despite what the South African government would like to do, that is depriving their children of education, they always strive to get their children into schools, to get them educated. And pay for the education of their children. It's a very big sacrifice done under all sorts of harassments, because we've got harassments. The children are harassed, the parents are harassed, everybody's harassed. And what's worse, South Africa is a country of stratas. At the top of the strata is the white man. Below the white man is the black man, is the white woman, rather. Below the white woman is the black man. And below the black man is the black woman. So, you see, it's dignity is not only being nipped away from the black women, but dignity is being nipped away from our men as well. So we have no choice. Winnie Mandela has no choice but to club together with the men to try and overthrow the system that is so corrupt, that diminishes the black woman and the black man to a nothing. And this is what she's being tortured for.
What is a banning order? What does it mean to live under a banning order?
It's terrible. At first, she was under house arrest in Orlando. So she was in familiar surroundings, even though people were not allowed to go and see her at her house. But she was in familiar surroundings and amongst people that she knew. And the South African government must have thought that this was not effective enough. So she was then banished to the Free State, to a town called Brentford. She is not allowed to have any visitors. She's not allowed to see more than one person at a time. And she can only have her family members going to see her. She's continuously trailed by a policeman that parks outside the house where she lives, a man called Prinsloo. She is not allowed, she cannot be quoted in South Africa. So this makes life very difficult. And if she goes to see her husband, she's to report to the police. And the police should say when she should take her plane to go and see her husband. When she reaches Cape Town, where her husband is, she has to go to report to the police again to say that she is in Cape Town and where she's going to live. See?
He's been under arrest since 1964, I think. He has served 18 years. Does she know about this award, by the way?
She knows about the award. The college wrote to her. And she telephoned me. I didn't even know about it. She telephoned me in London and asked me to come and collect it for her because she had tried to get a visa herself to come and collect it, but they wouldn't let her out.
Some people think that if you can embarrass a government, that they'll change their policy, and you know, particularly if they're holding political prisoners, that maybe one way of getting them to release it is just to embarrass that government in the eyes of the world. Do you think that the South African government embarrasses easily?
It's a fascist government. It's a fascist government. I mean, when Foster was the Prime Minister of South Africa, I remember hearing him on television being questioned by one of the British reporters one time. And he did admit that he fought on the side of Hitler during the war. And it is a well-known fact that most of the people who were supporting Hitler in the war went to South Africa and to Argentina.
You had worked with Winnie Mandela in a women's group. This was in the 60s, I think.
Yes.
And the name of the organization was the Women's League of the African National Congress.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Was there a difference, and is there a difference now between the actions led by women and the actions led by men?
No, there isn't. As I said to you, because of the situation in our country, we club together with our men and do most of the work together. But the women have got certain roles that they've assigned to themselves. For instance, we've got a creche in Tanzania for the children of the people in the struggle. Now, this is mainly run by women, our own women, who have qualified in nursery courses, pediatrics courses, and mothercraft, and social work, and childcare.
Do most Black South Africans know about Winnie Mandela? And has she become a symbol of protest?
Yes, oh yes. Her name is known all over South Africa, right through South Africa. So it's the name of her husband. And so everybody knows who Winnie Mandela is. She's the wife of the most important leader of the South African people in prison. And if you ask anybody in South Africa, who do you think is going to be the leader of the people of South Africa should liberation come? Everybody will say Nelson Mandela.
You and your husband have also both been active, but you've been working outside of the country.
Yes.
Your husband, Oliver Tambo, was exiled in, what year was that?
Yes, 1960. What happened that there were Sharpeville massacres in 1960. And at the time, the leadership of the African National Congress felt that the South African government is going to collect all the leaders and lock them away. And they didn't want to be all locked away without anybody representing them in the international world and telling the international world about what the situation is in South Africa. So my husband was then asked to come out and represent them. And indeed, they were right. A few months thereafter, the leaders were all collected. A state of emergency was declared a few days thereafter, actually, because I remember my husband leaving on a Saturday, and I think by Tuesday, a state of emergency was declared, and all the leaders were collected.
Now, you've settled, you left shortly after.
Yes, I left in September. My husband left in March, and I left in September 1960. First, to Swaziland, which is across the border. And from Swaziland, it was during the times of Nkrumah of Ghana, from Swaziland to Botswana. And then from Botswana, Dr. Nkrumah sent us a plane, a Dakota 3, from Ghana to collect us to Ghana. There were exiles of the African National Congress. There were exiles of the Pan-Africanist Congress in Ghana, all coming from South Africa. At that time, there was what was called a united front between the African National Congress and the PAC. And in the united front, they decided to choose people to stand for them in Africa and in the European countries. So the first country was London. And my husband and my husband, Mr. Mahomo, and Kozungwizi of Southwest Africa were assigned to go and work in London.
So you've since been living in London.
Yes, I got to Ghana, found that he had left for London. I stayed in Ghana for a week, and at the end of that week, the government gave me a ticket. I had two small children. One was 2 years old and one was 1.5 years old. So I joined my husband in London. And then from there, we started working from there. He and the other men were in the office. And I did my first assignment was to go to Egypt, where I was a founder member of the Afro-Asian Solidarity Committee. I followed that up by doing a tour of the Scandinavian countries and telling them about the situation in South Africa and especially the situation of the women in South Africa. And from that, of course, there were other women from South Africa who were coming into London, and we formed a broader organization.
What kinds of work are you doing now related to South Africa?
I'm doing development work. I'm interested in education. What I do is to encourage the young people to take educational scholarships. and to encourage also the women inside South Africa to take up educational projects with the children in South Africa and see that we cover as wide a place as possible to see that our young people are educated.
England has a lot of racial problems of its own. My understanding is that there's a lot of racism in England and that there's a lot of division across racial lines in British society now. How are you dividing your time between the issues that surround you in the neighborhood that you live in and the issues from the home that you come from in South Africa?
In England, I'm working in social services. I'm working with deprived children, children that have been abandoned by their parents, battered children, children that their parents do not want, maladjusted children, children whose family situations have driven them to be in the care of the government, and disabled children. This is the field in which I work. Now, you talk about England having its own racial problems, but there are racial problems everywhere. There are racial problems here in the United States. These have not been eradicated. I find that most of the kids that I work with in England are black kids. So as a black mother, I'm able to sit down with them and discuss the issues that face me and them all over the world, and how they can better themselves to be able to be good citizens of whatever country they live in, how they can better themselves not to be dependent on a government of any country, but to get such qualifications that will enable them to stand their own ground and help their own people. And as for eradicating racialism, every one of us can help to eradicate racialism by fighting where you are. Fighting where you are, because if you fight where you are and you are a success where you are, it helps black people somewhere else. But if you do not do that, if you fail, it nips away from the dignity of the other fighting black people in other parts of the world.
So we think that for Americans, for instance, who are very disturbed at apartheid in South Africa, that it's really better to fight racism in America
than it is to
send money abroad or whatever.
Well, they can send money abroad if they have it. I mean, they're in a rich country, and they can have projects whereby they send money abroad, whereby they offer scholarships to children in Africa. After all, it's their country of origin. Offer scholarships to children in Africa so that the children in Africa can get educational facilities. That they can do. But they also have to fight the oppression here. And we've got to give them moral support in their fight against racism here. Because if we eradicate racism in America and racism gets eradicated in America, that's one step forward. So you have one part of the world where racism has been defeated. Perhaps we can then quote it when we fight the next country and say that, no, we succeeded in America. The black people in America succeeded in fighting this, and they won. And we are going to fight it, and we must win.
If you went to South Africa now, you'd be immediately arrested.
I'd be arrested, of course, because of my activities, but mostly because of my husband's activities. Or perhaps they might even want to hold me hostage for my husband. If they find that they haven't got enough against to pin on me, they might try to hold me hostage for my husband.
But if conditions were different, if the government was changed, which is obviously a really big if, would you want to go back?
Yes. Yes. I mean, it's my country. The Afrikaner calls it his fatherland. It's my motherland.
Are you able to be in touch with people in South Africa, with your friends who you
yes,
left behind?
Yes, I do. I speak to Winnie over the telephone when she's in Cape Town to go and see her husband and have a chat. I speak to my sisters over the telephone. It's always tabbed, and you can always get an echo coming back, and you can always detect interference. But nevertheless, we do find means of ways of talking to them.
In your life in England, does being an exile from South Africa affect your status at all? Is it any harder or easier to get a job, or does it make a difference?
Despite racial problems in England, I have not come across racial problems when it comes to work. I've always applied for jobs and found a job, and I think most black people who have qualifications can get a job, because it's an advanced society, it's an urban society. People would have to have qualifications to get jobs. And I suppose everywhere else in the world it's easier if you have a piece of paper to get a job, and it's more difficult if you do not have that piece of paper.
You're in Philadelphia now to accept an honorary degree from Haverford for Winnie Mandela, who is under a banning order and cannot leave, not only South Africa, but cannot leave the house that she's in, basically. Did she ask you to do anything for her besides get the award? Did she ask you to look at certain things and tell her about it, or to give any messages to the people who you'd be meeting here?
She wrote a message. Would you like me to read it to you?
Yes, I would like you to read it.
Yes. On the occasion of the honorary degree award by Haverford College, Philadelphia, the president, Mr. Robert Stevens, the college board of managers, friends from the international community, ladies and gentlemen, the Religious Society of Friends, the Quakers, who founded this college in 1933, I humbly thank you for conferring upon me this honor, which I'll now have a duty to measure up to under the most difficult conditions in the history of my troubled land. It is only logical for me to ask myself, who am I to deserve such honor, particularly as the racist laws of my country are such that every sphere of our lives has suffered gross individual erosion of democratic freedoms, which are characteristic of a normal free society, through which free activities an individual engaged in a liberation struggle can prove his worth. Haverford College is the Oxford or Cambridge of the United States, an outstanding academic institution, intellectually in your land. It is with great pride that I, on behalf of my people, the fellow freedom fighters inside South Africa and those in exile, and above all the women who are more oppressed than any community in my country, and on behalf of whom I humbly accept this award, I thank you and assure you I shall continue my humble contribution side by side with all who cherish freedom.
Thank you for reading that for us. And thank you for telling us about Winnie Mandela and about yourself. Thank you.